A very good afternoon, everyone, and thank you again for tuning in to A Tale of Two Counties. I'm Charlie Coward.
Hello, and I'm Matt Evans from Active Lincolnshire. You dropped Active Dorset out of that bit, Charlie. Are you that big time now that you think everyone knows where you're from?
Well, we're into episode three. People know who we are, right?
That's it. We're found. So how have you been anyway, mate? How have you been? Because I feel like I've missed you, right? Because I haven't spoken to you for a few weeks. I've had 2 weeks with the wife and the kids, but they are not interested in chatting to me about ICBs and various interventions for health. They just want to have a holiday. So how have you been?
I've been really well. Yeah, we've had some holidays. It's been nice. Been a bit of a break. But things have been busy. Things have been busy here. Active Dorset. Things have been busy. Lots of good. Holiday. Lots of sunshine. So it's good. Did you play some golf on your holidays?
I've avoided the golf. The kids had a go at Crazy Golf and I missed it. And I was like, that's because I'm reigning champion from bringing the Dorset title home, clearly. So they avoided me.
Oh, I see. So you're never going to play again?
No. But I tell you what has happened, which this is gross, right? So now I can hear better. I've been and had my ears cleaned out, which if you've seen the film Shrek, like pulling those two lumps of candles out of it, it was disgusting like that. So I can now hear what I sound like, and I'm amazed we've got any listening figures whatsoever. But never mind. Do you know what the figures are like at the moment? Have I shared them with you yet?
I don't. I knew the early figures and they were good. And we've had some requests from different people about things they'd like to know more about. Yeah. But go on, hit me with the latest stats.
Okay, so the latest stats are saying there's been 112 downloads of the podcast, both of them. As far reaching as three times in India and twice in Denmark.
Wow. Where's our fan base in India coming from, I wonder?
No idea.
Any relations?
No, not me. No.
Okay.
Someone's got a dodgy VPN somewhere, aren't they?
Probably.
But we best be on our best behaviour today because you've got a guest for us, haven't you?
I have indeed. We've levelled up this episode. I think we think, right, well, now we're getting professional at this, she jokes. We better have a guest, but also to keep our audience and listeners interested. So it's not just us waffling on. We better have somebody else who knows something about something come and chat to us. And today we've got our guest is Neil Farmer, who's the chair of our board at Active Dorset. And I think this was spurred on by a couple of questions actually we had about the resource in our organisation and how you decide how you use it, which in the last episode 2, those people that listened, we talked quite a bit about resource and how you decide what you might do with the resource that you have in your team, however large or small. And we thought we'd chat a little bit about that today, but from a board perspective and how you might go about changing how you use your resource and the decisions involved in doing that. So I'll introduce Neil now so he can join the conversation. But Neil was appointed chair to our board at Active Dorset in 2017, having retired from 43 years promoting sort of sport and physical activity in various roles and guises in the local authority. And Neil's a past president of the Institute of Sport and Recreation Management and a chairman of a parish council, which I'm sure he'll mention as he chats. And he also sits on the National Development Group for the National Active Partnerships team, which some people listening might be familiar with. So that group guides the national board around the strengths, the challenges, the opportunities and the priorities that there are to drive the change, vision and impact of the national network of active partnerships. So without much more waffling on, I'll introduce Neil. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Charlie. Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for inviting me. You put up on a pedestal. Let's hope I don't fall off it too soon.
Thank you ever so much, Neil, for joining us. That's an amazing bio that Charlie's given you there. Lots of really interesting roles and stuff. So thanks for coming to share that with us. I think the first thing I just want to mention, like from my perspective, I've probably not done much with my board in the sense of the role I'm in now. So I'm really keen to hear kind of some of the history and where it's going. But I've got a role where I'm on a board of governors at a primary school and thinking about how that skill set transfers and what the difference is between kind of the officer doing the job and how the board make those strategic decisions is a real interest of mine. So thanks for joining us. This is great. Charlie, are you going to kick things off?
I will, yeah, happy to. I thought we'd start with a little bit of the background of the journey of perhaps the perspective of the Active Dorset board. And it might be similar to other boards in the network, because on the whole, Active Partnerships have been on a similar journey of change, having all moved with Sport England strategy. So Neil, could you tell us a little bit about the journey of the Active Dorset board, perhaps over the last sort of four or five years or whatever period you feel is relevant, and how things have changed in terms of the workings of the board and how you define success and impact?
Yeah, Charlie, thanks. I once gave a presentation to some school kids, and I started talking about the 1972 Munich Olympics. And it was only afterwards that the teacher came up to me and said, "You do realise that none of these kids were born in 1972. And the reason I say that is because you very kindly dated me from 2017 onwards. But my involvement in Active Dorset and partnership working in Dorset goes back nearly 30 years. And I won't bore you too much with it, but I think it's relevant because we started with a project when there were regional sports councils, and they went in 2009. It was called STEP, Sports Training Excellence and Participation. And Somerset Chief Executive Jane Knowles was our first officer. And then it was about sport for all. But we were mostly white Anglo-Saxon males who sat in an unconstituted meeting. We had no constitution, we had no financial responsibility, and we just saw Sport England as the funder, and we better go along with what they say. And it wasn't until County Sports Partnerships came along, sort of mid-noughties, I suppose, that things became, around that time that Sport England abolished regional councils, things got centralised. The Labour government was coming to an end, Conservative Lib Dem pact was coming in, the austerity measures came in, and suddenly things got a little bit more serious. And the Dorset County Sports Partnership almost had the unenviable position of being the first to go bust. And that was because the board was quite frankly useless, and I was a part of that board, so I can hold my hand up, because there was no good governance, there was no sound financial management and risk planning, there was no effective liaison between the chief executive at the time, and it's very easy to say, well, that was all his fault at the time, but it wasn't. It was a collective responsibility of collective failure. And it was at that time that Martin Kimberley had joined previously as a finance manager, and he took over as chief executive. And we decided that we had to change things dramatically. And his suggestion was we set up a community interest company, which we did. And of course, then when you're responsible to Companies House, things become serious, because you've got to have good governance, you've got to have sound financial risk management, and you've got to have an effective board. And this all sounds very tedious, but you're running a company, and it's when you're talking about public money, whether it's Sport England money or wherever it's coming from, you have to be accountable. From that time, we've 10, 12, 12 years, we've sort of grown and developed. And, when I came off my second, I stepped down about 2012 and then came back on as chair in 2017, as you said, Charlie. And I suppose during that time, we've started to evolve the organisation through system change. As a community interest company, we see Sport England as a partner, and certainly through the work that you've been doing through health and being able to break through into the health sector and work with them as a partner, it's become to a point where, 30 years ago it was about sport for all, and today it's where sport is one of the tools that we use to and I'm going to crib if I can sit on my notes here. It's our job as a board, and when we signed up to this, our new strategy in 2020, is where, you know, sport and physical activity is recognised for the positive impact it has on the lives of the people in Dorset, and I'm sure the same in Lincolnshire, through improved physical and mental well-being, but also about education attainment, social adhesion and positive economic development. So, you know, our role has shifted in 30 years from being a group of guys who sat around a table spending sporting the money to try and get people to play sport, to a point now where we're trying to make the lives of people better through using sport and physical activity. And as a board, we are now, and we're nowhere near the finished article, but as a board, we now understand, I think, more clearly what our role is and the responsibilities that we have. So, you know, a bit of a potted history.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that, Neil, because that's real good context for anybody, you know, like me, who maybe hasn't got the history of where the active partnerships came from and what's gone before. And I'm sure every active partnership will have a lot of similarities and a lot of differences based on relationships with their local councils and their relationships with their health board. And that's kind of what we're trying to explore as we work through kind of what's going well and sharing that. So having that kind of experience that you bring, I think that really adds depth, doesn't it, Charlie, to your organisation, because you've got somebody there who's not just come, you know, not doing universities down, but come straight out of uni with a textbook idea. We've got real life experience there within an evolving system and change and growth.
And I think that you use the word, Matt, about relationships. And if it's anything, it is about building relationships with whoever, whether it's, you know, Doris down the road who wants to come and work in the cafe, or whether it's the chief executive for the new, you know, integrated care service. You know, our job is about creating relationships, because that's where you get things done.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something we've talked about quite a bit on the previous episodes, isn't it, Charlie? And what we will continue to do on our future ones that we've got lined up. So that's quite exciting. You know, when it comes, Neil, we're thinking about this changing relationship with Sport England, and you use the phrase that you see them now as a partner. How do you, and not just them, others as well, but how do you articulate as a board, like, the impact that the organisation's having? That's quite a big question, isn't it? Sorry.
No, it's not. It's a good question. And, you know, in the old days, it's not so long ago, that we used to judge success by numbers, didn't we? By percentages, you know, how many classes have you put on, you know, how many people attended, you know, 90% attendance. Well, yeah, but what impact did it have? How's it made a difference? You know, none of that was ever there. And, you know, board meetings used to be pretty dull affairs, I have to say, when people used to put numbers in front of us, because you just say, oh, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And that was the end of the conversation. So I think, you know, now, you know, it's about measuring our success by the impact that we have on those we engage with, because it's not just about people. Of course, it's about those who benefit, you know, as the end users. But it's about the relationships we have with partners, what their expectations are of us, and the impact that we have on their service. And that can differ. So there's going to be a different set of impacts for Sport England. There'll be a different set of impacts that Charlie's got to come up with to our health professionals. There'll be a different set of impacts for the unitary authorities that we're doing some work for. So ultimately, how do you measure that as success? Well, the decision we took as a board was that we needed to tell a story. You know, everything had to be about a story. So if you tell a good story, you get some understanding about how that work has benefited that organisation and what the positive outcomes have been. And Charlie and her team, all the officers, they present to us as a board every month two things. One is a Excel table where they identify the areas of work that they've been doing, the issues and challenges, and the learning that's come out of it. You know, that might be something around about pain or cancer. That's a better one. I read something about cancer and trying to how you could use a questionnaire in terms of cancer and how that might make a positive impact in terms of treatment. And what the issues were the questions right? And you know, and it gave the board a picture of the officer doing the work, what they were doing, what the challenges were from it, how they were going to overcome them, and what the learning was from. And ultimately, you can pick out of that where the board might have a role to play, where, you know, from board perspective, we might need to put a bit more challenge in, or a bit more support in, or it might even be a bit more resource. You don't get that if somebody just says, well, we put a course on and 9 people turned out of a possible 20. That makes sense.
Yeah, Charlie, can I jump in again? I know it's your turn for a question, but I'm wondering, and I've alluded to being on that board at the primary school for my role, but I think sometimes hearing about numbers is easy, isn't it? If you, like you've just said there, you know, 9 on a course, there could have been 20. Well, my head, I'm, oh, so where were the other 11? And you start, you go down a rabbit hole, I think was the phrase, Warren, around why hasn't that worked to be full to 20? But actually what you're telling us there, Neil, is by the officers presenting it as a story, we're hearing about what issues and what's gone well, but also what we've learned from doing that. So is it fair to say the board will get to hear the equivalent of why the course wasn't full? You know, I'm using that as a bit of a cheeky analogy, but the board get to hear about that. And actually the board are comfortable hearing that rather than we had 9 at £20, it should have been 20 at £20.
Well, the board only works well if it only hears good news. It's pretty ineffective. It needs to hear the stuff that's not working so well, and you only get that you don't get that from numbers. You get that from dialogue and discussion, and from, you know, and from I don't know what can I use as an example. If we're looking at ensuring that we have an impact on how people are less in pain, and how we can help to reduce waiting lists by making sure people are, you know, more physically active, well, so they can get on the operation. You don't get on an operating waiting list. You don't get that if you just say, well, there's 20 people on the waiting list and they're waiting 3 months. You say, well, why are they, you know, that doesn't tell you a story. The story is about why they're on there for 3 months. And the fact is they might only need to be there on 1 month if they were more physically, they were more physically active. So if you have that sort of story and that sort of dialogue, you can tease all that out in a board discussion. And that's, I think, what we found, I found as chair of a board, that, you know, sometimes it was very difficult to stimulate discussion. And since we've started telling stories, I find it very difficult to stop discussion. And my timing of meetings is now pretty appalling. And I take that as a positive because there's a lot of discussion going on.
Yeah,
I think that is a positive now. And that kind of brings us on to the next question that we had, is about a lot of what we discuss is it's a people game. And I think that's quite a common phrase now amongst the network. It is about the people that you develop relationships with, whether they're advocates or whether they're maybe blockers to what you're trying to achieve. And we wanted to ask you a question about, in your sort of little evolution of the board, where you've moved from counting numbers perhaps and bums on seats towards system change, working with partners, and almost made it harder for a period of time to understand the impact or the work that's going on until the board gets comfortable in measuring success in a different way. Did you face any resistance to that, or how important were the people on your board in saying, okay, we're going to go for that, we're going to do something different, we're going to work in a different way? Was there a discussion perhaps between you and Martin as the chief executive, or you and fellow board members, about changing the way the partnership was working and how they spent their resource?
Yes, I think as chair, a key part of my role is to listen, and to listen carefully to what's being said. And Martin, our chief exec, will sit down. I meet with him every 3 weeks with Dave, my vice chair. And Martin, Martin will just throw things at us. And some of them are pretty challenging and some of them are a bit scary, to be honest. You've got to go with it. So, the three of us have that conversation and then we'll take it to the board and share it with the board. Now, one of the things that frustrates me with that, I will answer your question. One of the things that frustrates me, I understand about good governance. And I've said about good governance and I understand that, you need to rotate your board and you need to have a very diverse board. But what I don't agree with is throwing out your skill ahead of time. And there's a real danger with new governance arrangements. That's what you're going to lose your good people simply because their time on the board as per Sport England regulations are up and running. So we've been pretty lucky over the last, certainly during my current chairmanship, to have a pretty good cohort of board members who've been on the board for a few years. As I said in my intro, all board members used to be local government white Anglo-Saxon males. We've now got educationists, we've got health professionals, both working and retired. We've got a much broader mix. But because majority of those board members have been with us on this journey, they themselves have developed and challenged as they've gone along. So it hasn't been, if there was a dinosaur in the room, it was more likely to be me. Because I'd be the one who'd be saying, well, hang on a minute, you might say that, that's check or check and challenge, but that makes you a bit of a dinosaur. So no, I don't think it's been difficult. It's been challenging in the thing. The whole board has had to sometimes sit there and say, what do you mean by that, Charlie? What's that actually mean?
Neil, sorry to jump in, cut you off there, but I'm listening and I'm thinking, there's two bits. There's one bit where it's, well, people are going to move on anyway because their term come to an end. So if there's somebody listening to this and they're really, really struggling with somebody, hold out hope because their term will come, they'll go. Could be one thing. But then there's that other bit that's going through my mind around, well, if you want to engage with the board, it sounds like the board need things to come from the officers coming up. They need to hear the stories. They need people like myself and Charlie to bring the message and not educate, that sounds a little bit sort of condescending, but almost tell the stories, bring it to the board, don't wait for the board to ask. Is that fair?
It's very fair. You talked to, I think Charlie's coming about dinosaurs. Not to any of my colleagues on the board are dinosaurs, but if I've ever had any resistance, it was perhaps why a couple of other than the chief executive officers sitting in a room. Right. While they're sitting in the meeting with the board, well, they're sitting in the board room because they're the experts, and I want to hear it from them. Not, I don't want to hear it secondhand from Martin. I want to hear it from Charlie. I want to hear from you, Matt. And some board members might have felt that was difficult. If you want to talk about Charlie, we'll ask her to leave the room. If you're not happy with her performance, we'll ask her to leave. We're not frightened. Frightened of doing that. But you've got to hear it firsthand, and you've got to hear it from people who are doing the job. And I think our board is stronger by having senior staff in the room, telling us directly how it is, and being able the opportunity to answer the questions.
That must have been quite intimidating, Charlie. Though I'm thinking somebody new to post going to talk to board.
I think I can reflect on that when I first started, and coming to the board meeting for the first time. And I would say, yeah, Matt, it was intimidating because you think, right, I want to, put a good representation of the work that we've achieved in whatever period I was there. You're also coming in new to it, so you don't fully understand everything about what you may or may not do or what you do know and what you don't know. So I think it was intimidating at the start. However, I always went in with an honest opinion of what I thought we should do and what would deliver most impact for the funding that we had and reach the most amount of people, make the most significant change. And Martin was quite clear with our direction. So I think that always really helped in that I had a chief executive who's very clear about this is the direction we're going on and trusted me to speak to the board about the work that we were doing and the opportunities that we saw ahead of us. And a lot of what we do when we go to the board is present the opportunities that we see coming. And then that allows the board to have a discussion about which of these sound like a good opportunity and ask me for more information and challenge me and Martin on our thinking. Why do you think you want to go and, I don't know, attend that MSK group or get involved in that piece of work about outpatient centres? Is that a good use of officer time? And if we do that, does that mean you need to backfill somewhere else, or how are you going to do that? And it challenges your decision making, and I've always felt that that's been really positive, that constructive challenge from the board and understanding how the board works together to make decisions and what they see as impactful helps you as an officer then when you're going away in your day-to-day and making decisions and dealing with other senior leaders, because quite often when you're dealing with people, as you know, Matt, who are more senior than you, so having that real life experience of doing that within your own organization prepares you really well for those discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've articulated well. But if I take you back to that very first time you went to that board meeting, that must have been if someone's listening that hasn't spoken to their board yet around working with health, what are you telling them to tell them? We've got this, Neil's kind of gearing us towards tell the story. So we're not going for numbers and county things, we're going for tell the story. And it's not about sport, because some of them might still be kind of stuck in that spot. It's about physical activity for making people healthier, making people happier. What's the story you'd open with, Charlie, if you were going today? There's a big question.
That is a big question. I think we told the story of the opportunities, and Neil, you can jump in at any point if you remember something differently or something that stood out for you. But when we first went, we did have a numbers target. Within our active aging project, we said we wanted to reach 20,000 people. And I remember feeling that was an incredible pressure to try to reach that number. And there were quite a lot of questions about the numbers from the board. How are we going to reach the numbers? If we're slightly behind on them, what do we do about it? Where do we see the numbers coming from? And instead of us focusing on the numbers, we saw that as a secondary outcome that would happen if we took all the right steps we needed to take. We articulated the opportunity. So we talked about there's an opportunity in cancer over here. This is the relationship we've developed. These are the opportunities we see. These are the challenges in that relationship. There's an opportunity in MSK. Or an opportunity in diabetes. And we presented those to the board, and that was how we articulated the work we were doing. So we're mapping these clinical pathways, we're meeting with these senior leaders. These are the, as it is now, the Integrated Care Board, as it was then, the CCG and the Acute Trust. We were articulating their priorities. We said, we need to work in this way because this is their priorities. This is what they're telling us. We need to use physical activity as a tool to help their priorities. And I think that's how my advice would be, is to talk about the opportunities.
Charlie, I don't know, I can remember back, yes, there were numbers, weren't there? And I think they quickly became meaningless because they weren't helping the board. They weren't helping the board understand the relationships we were trying to build with the health partners and what the benefits to that relationship and that partnership working with the health profession was, both to them and to us as an organisation. And we only got to understand the relationship building when we got to understand exactly what you were doing on a day-to-day basis, and what the things that were working well and why things, importantly, weren't working well. Because this has been a fast-moving, four years down the line, the change has been so positive and so, I think, rapid. If you think, step back in 1994, nothing much happens until about 2017, then suddenly 2017 to 2022, things are going at a much more dynamic and positive pace in terms of the way we operate. And we would never have been able to support. And that's what the board, the board, when the board challenges, it's only challenging because it wants to support and it wants to understand. And if you've got a board that doesn't challenge positively and doesn't challenge because it wants to understand, then it's not much of a board. And I always hope that as a board, our challenge has been positive challenge. Because we want to learn, not because we're critical of what. If we're critical of the service, we'll just keep the chief executive in the room and hammer him to the floor. You know, that's the way it should be. Because that's his job, isn't it? His job is to take the bullets.
Well, he's definitely not practicing his golf very much, Neil. I can assure you that. But just thinking about, you know, being in a boardroom and talking about where do we go next? As a board, you have to set a strategic vision, don't you, for where you want this CIC, this organization, to go to. And I guess making sure the story that we're bringing from the officers meets with the vision and the strategic needs is kind of a bit of a balancing act, because, oh, let's go work with health because they've got loads of money. Could be one of the, what was the phrase? The dinosaur kind of attitude, couldn't it? Where's the money? It's over there. Right, we'll go and do what they want us to do so we can get that money. But actually, if you set your vision and where you're going as an organisation around people being healthier, people being happier, you're going to have a different set of outcomes to look at other than where do we get the next £20,000-£30,000 from? And I guess, Neil, my cheeky question is, did you see any of that? Or have you been all right just moving with that's where we're going? We're going to work with health.
I don't think in the current climate that you can look too far down the road. I can remember when I was working, we used to do our strategies. It was short, medium and long term. And we had these great debates about where we're going to be in 5 to 10 years. Well, can you tell me where you're going to be in 5 to 10 years? I'd probably got a better idea where I'd be in 5 to 10 years because I'm far older than you. But I mean, you couldn't tell me where you might tell me where you hope to be in 5 to 10 years in terms of your career. Charlie, the same thing. But in reality, you don't know. And I think it's exactly the same in terms of the workings of the board. And, with what was the last figure I saw, 18% inflation. Well, at the moment, we've only got funding, Sport England funding for the next 4 years. So we're not going to get to year five. I think the board has to look at things in a much more short term basis, short and slightly medium. And I don't think now is the time for a board to be trying to race ahead with really grand ideas, because, you know, for me, this is the best Sport England strategy that there's ever been, because it's about, you know, it's working in partnership. It's not Sport England dictating. And they've got government money. I've been critical of their governance, but I understand they've got to answer the government, and there's governments, they've got their governance and they've got to pass governance on. I understand that. But it's the opportunity now is to consolidate, I think, what we're doing, rather than seek to expand too quickly, too far. I take a more cautious approach, if that answers your question.
No, it's good insight. I guess where I'm kind of going for is kind of why choose to kind of invest and resource a health kind of approach to things, because obviously a lot of your team links back to the health agenda, when, you know, is that because right now our country needs more support with the health of the nation, and all the data sets and all the evidence out there would suggest that's a key priority, and perhaps there's money available through health to work in partnership with them, because maybe there's another agenda like, I don't know, getting more people playing sport, which doesn't have the same kind of ring to it. You know, that decision-making process is kind of what I was thinking about as a board. How do you get to that?
Well, I think sometimes, and I'm desperately trying to think back, and you might be able to help me here, Charlie, exactly how we got into, if you like, the I mean, we clearly applied to Sport England, And I think we're the only successful part county sports active partnership to get funding to do this health work. So I guess, you know, sometimes things are just opportunities, aren't they? Opportunities come along, and you know, and because we've got a good team, because we've got, you know, a good chief executive, we've got a good deputy chief executive, and a strong team who have got reputation, they've got high reputation. Don't embarrass Charlie, but it's true. When you've got a good profile, people trust you, and they're prepared to invest in you. And obviously, we were successful with the Sport England and the 2-year project. And the thing that we've really benefited from that is that health partners now trust us. They trust Charlie, they trust Martin, they trust they trust the team, to a point where you know, when we tell the story, you know, when you're talking about impact and success, well, you know, when you're successful is when your story gets repeated back to you from other people, and when people say to you, know, when organisations say to you, would you help us with this project? And I refer to the outpatient clinic at Beals, where we've got our little logo at the bottom. I mean, you know, with the health minister standing behind. I mean, that's big wins. That's big wins for us. That shows that we are, you know, making a difference. And that's really, I mean, is that right, Charlie? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. It helped us in the initial phase, Matt. And I think I talked to you about that. I'm quite honest in that receiving the active ageing funding from Sport England, and as Neil talked about, being successful in that funding application allowed us to dedicate some resource to working in health. And I think we've added to that in terms of the size of the team. And I think that's maybe the challenge, Neil, isn't it? Is how much of our resource of Active Dorset, if you think about people resource, do we load into one area of what we do? Health, and health is so big that we know it can eat as much resource as you're willing to perhaps throw at it. But I think that's where that good positive challenge comes with from the board. That is what I would say.
Yeah, I'm listening to you both talk, and it's really insightful. Thank you both for sharing. But I'm not going to get a 2-year investment on an active aging project. You've the guinea pigs. You've done it. You've proved working with health works in that sense. And you're in a really good position now where you've got some established relationships, and the trust that Neil referred to is there. So I guess for people in sort of starting out, I hope I'm building those relationships, that trust. But it's a different approach for us because we haven't got that cash injection to go. But the decision feels like it's right to invest some time, a lot of time, in working with health, because it feels like there's enough data and enough reasons why helping people be healthier is going to have a bigger impact on Lincolnshire in our case than trying to increase the numbers of first aid qualified sports coaches. You know, I'm going back to that.
I think Matt, from where I sit, we were given a good kickstart because we were given the money to get going, and a part of this relationship that you and Charlie, you know, Dorset and Lincolnshire have is us happily passing on our learning. So hopefully that's a good step for you, and Charlie's doing some work. We're doing some work in Bristol with the hospital there. So we're happy to pass on that learning. And let's be honest, that's what we should be doing. I don't say we were pathfinders, but you know, we had opportunities to learn very early on. So we're happy to pass that on. But what you need to understand, and hope others who are listening, you say, well, we haven't had the money. Well, you're the resource. You've got a resource yourself. You are a resource. Your team is a resource, and you know, when you have those conversations with the partners, and if they take the learning that we can pass on, they should see, and it's all for them if they don't see, that there is a resource that you have. It's not in pounds, shillings, and pence, but there is a resource that Lincolnshire Partnership can put into that health agenda in Lincolnshire, which is going to benefit them. And when they see that, and they've seen that, and to me that was a big step change in Dorset, when they recognised that we, you know, we were perhaps too confident when we were really realized, you know, we are punching above our weight, and you can punch above your weight. And when the health partners realize that you might be a relatively small organization compared to them, but you can give, you know, far much more in terms of support than the size of your organization might dictate. And that you only get that there when you've had good conversations. So if nothing else, you just generate your conversations and show good learning, and it'll come. I'm sure it'll come.
Yeah, that, what a great, I feel like we should end there, Charlie, because that was quite powerful. That I've got a little tingle on it. Oh yeah. And I don't even know if we should maybe rename the title of this Punching Above Our Weight rather than Board Conversations. But yeah, no. Thanks, Neil. Are you happy there, Charlie? If we start wrapping up there.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that summarises it perfectly, because you're trying to influence beyond your immediate resource available to you, aren't you? Using what you have to influence the work of those bigger organisations.
So if we're going for some top tips, Neil, for anyone listening, I've made a few notes here, but I did get a little bit engrossed in the conversation, so I put my pen down at one stage. But we talked a lot about relationships, about internal and external, but building those relationships so there's trust. Relationships with the board as well, where we've got the second top tip being around presenting it as a story. So if that's an officer within the team, bringing that story around, what are the issues you face? What are the wins that you make? But what's the learning that you get out of that story and working in that way? The taking it to the board being that top tip, not waiting for it as a story. And then finally, that third one there, that, yeah, we are in a position where we can punch above our weight, so we should be keen to try and get into those environments and share what we're doing and share why, because obviously the work with health is clearly a priority, isn't it, with the state that we're in as a country.
If I could summarize for any board chairs or board members that might be listening, I would say that boards need to continually adapt. They need to embrace risk, and to be open to what I think I said on an online Zoom meeting some time ago. Enter into a sort of a joint collective blue sky conversation that helps to helps to create a shift in mindset around system change, where. And it's not my quote, I heard it from somebody, where everybody's activity is everybody's business. And I thought that was pretty strong, pretty powerful, that everybody's activity is everybody's business. So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you ever so much, Neil. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Charlie, for setting up Neil as well to come in and have a chat with us.
That's all right. Yeah, that was fantastic, Neil. Really insightful.
So we'll sign off there, shall we, Charlie? And we'll be back again. We've got a couple more conversations in the pipeline, haven't we?
Yes, I think we're back again in just a couple of weeks' time, so recording a bit sooner. And hopefully next time we're having a guest from, I think, your colleagues, Matt, in Lincolnshire, maternity team. Is that right?
Yeah, hoping to get that one sorted out. And I think you also get contact with James at Outpatients. Is he lined up?
Yes.
So
yes, he's
lined up. A couple more visitors to get in the next couple of months. So that'll be good. And as we've said before, if anybody wants to request that we have a discussion about something, they should get in touch through email or get in contact on the old phone as well. Give us a ring at Active Lincolnshire, Active Dorset, and we'll see what we can do for you. So thanks all for being here. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye now.